And gaming has now exceeded oil and gas as a source of revenue in our state. That is truly unbelievable for those of us who remember when it was on the ground floor.
I think it's amazing, I had no idea until I took over as chairman the huge financial impact to the state that gaming is. It's about $750 million just in the area that I regulate. When you include the figures from Miss Rose from the lottery and parimutuel wagering, you're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of $900 million. And it has surpassed oil and gas in this state in terms of revenue to the state.
Almost $1 billion.
Yes.
And now it's something the state relies on and would not want to go away, but that's where you come in. It has to be regulated.
Absolutely. It's an industry that's probably the most regulated in the state of Louisiana, and that's for good reason. So you know, part of my job, aside from protecting the interests of the state, is to find that balance between regulation and permitting the industry to do what they do, and that's provide entertainment.
I mentioned with Rose Hudson that when the lottery came into being in the early 90s, many thought it would be a source of scandal, and that has not happened. How is the success story happened as far as revenue without scandal accompanying it?
I am perhaps most proud of the fact. I mean, I come from state police. Most of my adult career was spent in the Louisiana State Police. And, you know, the regulation of this industry is split between my board, a 9-person board and a small staff, and the state police and the attorney general. And in the years that gaming has been legal in the state, there has not been one significant scandal among any of those parties. And I think that that speaks well to the way it's been crafted in terms of regulation in Louisiana and the people who are involved. I think that instills public confidence, and that's the only way this industry can survive.
All right. Well, already we've had a listener commenting last week about the show we did with Rose Hudson of the lottery. I noted that the lottery and casino gambling were pretty close, I thought, as far as actual revenue produced. But according to your numbers, casino gambling has now exceeded the lottery, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
By a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. And we're not in competition for Ms. Rose's dollar. She's carved out her own niche. And I think she mentioned last week, listened to her on the air, and I think she noted the fact that, you know, the people who play the lottery aren't necessarily the ones who are going to go to Mississippi and bet on sports or the ones that go to casinos. It's different consumers who are partaking in the different sectors of gaming.
How do you see sports betting evolving?
I think Louisiana will eventually get there. People are betting on sports today in Louisiana. It just happens to be with their barber or on the internet.
We know that. In fact, when you were state police, you busted a lot of people.
One of the largest bookie operations we took down was at an LSU fraternity house. That was ground zero for some illegal bookmaking at the time. There's plenty of illegal bookmaking going on today, and I think Louisiana will eventually come to terms with the fact that one way to eliminate that will be to legalize it, regulate it.
I recall once with a coworker, he was placing a bet, and he thought he was calling his bookie, and he was talking to a gentleman from state police. Might have been you, Rod.
Someone that goes to the same gym I do engaged me recently with a long conversation. He played 20 questions with me about sportsbook, and I'm convinced now that he's a bookie. And he was really wondering when it was going to be legalized, because he's probably going to have to do something else with his livelihood. But I think it will come. Mississippi did it. They did it sort of in a trick fashion. A lot of the legislators did not even know that they had voted for it. But they've authorized it, and my colleague over there, Alan Godfrey, says they'll be up and running in 30 days.
30 days.
30 days.
877-217-5757. Sports betting, I would think, will just be a huge windfall as far as state coffers. We love sports, and all surveys have shown that when people gamble on a game, they're much more likely to state of the end, have an interest. For example, if LSU is a 4-touchdown favorite and they're ahead by 4 touchdowns at the end of the third quarter, many people leave the stadium. But if they bet on the game, they're probably going to stay to the very end.
Well, the fact is, it's really not the cash cow that it's perceived to be. If you look at all of the gaming revenue in Las Vegas, sportsbook is a very small percentage of that. somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 12%, I believe. The amount of money bet is incredible, and it would be in Louisiana. But depending on the tax rate, when they ever get to that point in Louisiana, if it's a reasonable tax rate, it could bring anywhere from 20 to 30 additional million into the state revenue stream.
Only 20 to 30?
Yes.
I would think at some point it'd be more than that, but you're the expert. Now, another listener notes that if you're too good at gambling, that the casinos will no longer let you in their doors. Why are they allowed to do that if you're too good at what you do?
Actually, a law was passed in this legislative session that basically would prohibit that.
Has the governor signed it?
Yes. Yes, that was Walt Leger that introduced a bill that gave some greater context to who could be excluded from a casino. Now, I do know of a property in Louisiana that, you know, many of the high-end properties will bring in people from out of state, from around the world. And sometimes if they win too much, they don't bring them in as often. So I could never make it in the business world because I don't understand all the dynamics, but I think I understand a little bit about gaming. If you're winning, they can't throw you out of the casino.
At one time they could, though, couldn't they?
Well, it depends on if you were doing things like counting cards or doing something that was improper. You can't be excluded just because you're winning at a game.
And there are professional gamblers who have crafted their abilities, and they're pretty good at this.
Absolutely, many people make a livelihood out of this, and a good livelihood. I couldn't do it, but a lot of people do.
But most people don't win over time, and that's why these places stay in business, and why money is produced for the state of Louisiana. That's a reality. And there are some people who say, "Look, I'm going to spend $300 a month on entertainment. And if I don't do it at a casino, I'm going to do it somewhere else." I don't consider those people to be problem gamblers because it's entertainment for them. But what about those who spend their whole paycheck and go beyond their means?
They need some help. And Louisiana is one of the few states that carves out money out of that gaming revenue stream to support compulsive gambling treatment in the state of Louisiana. We have a treatment facility in Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm in close contact with Janet Miller, who runs that facility. There are requirements in the law that require posting of the 800 number. Obviously, there are people who are addicted to all kinds of things in society, and whether it's internet shopping or pornography or gambling, and they're driven to that compulsion, and they need help. There's a process in the state where you can exclude yourself from casinos. You can sign yourself up to be excluded from the casino property, and if you won a jackpot, they wouldn't pay you. They'd remove you from the property, and most states have those kind of provisions. Go ahead.
That brings us to a question from Carol asking, what's the reason people most often are thrown out of casinos?
For drinking too much and being disruptive, it becomes a public safety issue. It's common in casinos to serve alcoholic beverages, and just like if you drink too much in a bar, you can be expelled. But seldom are people thrown out because they're winning too much.
Now the riverboats are going to have the ability to expand their operations now, and no longer will they be required, quote, to be on waterways. How's that going to change the environment?
If I could kind of lay some groundwork for that, that came out of a task force that Senator Ronnie Johns created back in the 2016 legislative session. He designated me as the chair of that, which was a little awkward because I'm the regulator, and Tyler Bridges questioned me from time to time, how can you be the regulator and the head of this task force? But I tried to thread the needle.
And so we're going to have expansion, yes, as far as these facilities.
Well, I would challenge the premise there. I don't consider an expansion, and we can address that after the break if you want to.
Sure.
But we're going to move on to land in some cases.
In some cases. And how soon? We'll talk about it with Ronnie Jones. Your number is 877-217-5757 for the head of the Gaming Control Commission. Back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ronnie Jones, veteran of state police and 5 years head of the Louisiana Gaming Control Board, is with us. The board was created in 1996 as an independent body comprised of 9 appointees from a variety of disciplines who serve 6-year staggered terms. And in addition to his position as chairman of the board, Jones served as chairman of the 11-member Riverboat Gaming and Economic Development Task Force. And as we noted, riverboats will now have the capacity to move on land. And it could mean expansion. It certainly will tweak the industry, and it's something that the riverboats wanted. How will this evolve over time based on what you know now?
I think we've already started the process of developing the rules and regulations. We hope to have those in place optimistically by the end of the year to lay out a process. But the task force made it clear, and Senator Johns, as the primary author, made it clear, this is about economic development. This is about investing in properties and creating resort-type properties, much like some of the resorts properties we already have in Louisiana, like the Golden Nugget or LaBerge Lake Charles, LaBerge Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. This isn't just about moving all your slot machines onto land in a prefab warehouse. That's not going to be acceptable or permissible, and the rules will sort of lay that out. This is about economic development, creating jobs, and creating resort facilities in the state.
And the riverboats are right now, they can't go beyond 15. Is that going to stay the same?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Alan Godfrey is my co-regulator in Mississippi, and he appeared at either the first or second task force meeting we had. And in his opening statement, he said the last thing that we need in Mississippi right now is one more slot machine. He said Louisiana did it right. He said, you know, we opened up into Mississippi and let the market dictate how many casinos you have, but I think you guys, talking about Louisiana, did it the right way by limiting the amount of properties you have.
877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. In our remaining time with Ronnie Jones, and coming next will be Moses Evans, the Justice of the Peace, on the third anniversary of the same-sex marriage decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Paul in New Orleans asks, how do we know sports betting will not corrupt sports?
Well, since 1949, you've been able to bet on sports in Las Vegas, and it's had no appreciable corruptive influence as a result of that. I think it will need to be left to state regulators to work with the leagues, that we share information. We've studied what happens in Australia and Great Britain with how they regulate it. And they've had sports betting for a number of years in both of those markets, and we as regulators are comfortable that if we're communicating with each other, we have the proper rules and regulations and laws in place, that we can maintain the integrity and catch those who might try and take advantage of sports events.
But we did have a point-shaving scandal in the mid-'80s at Tulane in basketball. I'm sure you were with state police then. That was big news nationally. Pro players make so much money now, I can't imagine them throwing a game to cash in on sports betting. But college players, different story.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, National College Athletic Association was adamantly opposed to the New Jersey case when it went before the Supreme Court. That opposition really hasn't lessened, but they understand the landscape now is going to change. And that's always been a problematic area where you have athletes playing for universities. They get none of the benefits from it. Universities get tremendous revenue benefits from their talent.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the riverboats, the listener asks, when do they have to close, or do they?
I don't understand why they would be closing. Perhaps
so they can stay over 24 hours?
Oh, yes. Riverboats can stay open 24 hours a day.
Well, we had this discussion a few weeks ago here in Baton Rouge about the bars staying open till 4 o'clock, where if you're on a riverboat, you can drink all night long, can't you?
Most of the properties are open 24 hours. Yes, that's correct.
So there hasn't been a real problem, as far as I know, with the riverboats having this luxury, and some would say, why not allow the rest of the businesses to do the same, but it did not pass in the Metro Council this go-around. Gambling, as you note, is right at $1 billion now in the money it produces for the state, and you have a busy job as a regulator, and if anything, it's not being condensed, it's being expanded. So as we move along, how is your job going to become more difficult?
I don't think so. The first real test after the riverboat challenges will come with fantasy sports. Fantasy sports will go parish by parish vote in the November referendum, and it will be left to the Gaming Control Board to regulate that in those parishes where it's approved. I have a small board, and I have a small staff. Most of the hard work, most of the manpower is in state police and the Attorney General's office. Those staffs might have to grow as a result of any expansion of gaming in the state.
Your background in state police, I would think, is an advantage to the job you have now.
It's an anomaly among most of my co-regulators, but I think they understand the advantages. The first several chairmen were retired judges, and that certainly worked well. Beginning two chairmen who preceded me before, they were both retirees from state police, and that seems to have worked. I mean, I bring the unique advantage of having been at the legislature when the laws were passed. Mm-hmm. I was in state police as a policymaker when we crafted the regulatory structure. It was probably the two or three worst years of my entire career.
Listener Tracy asks, how many video poker establishments remain in Louisiana?
We've got about 13,000 devices, I believe, the last monthly report that we got, in 1,700 locations. The largest number of locations are the mom-and-pop bars, lounges, mm-hmm. but predominantly the larger percentage of devices are found in truck stops.
And another listener asks, are you involved in any way involving horse racing?
No. My only involvement in horse racing is that the four paramutual tracks in the state, in Bossier, New Orleans, Lafayette, and Vinton, have slot facilities in conjunction with their tracks. I don't regulate the horse side of it at all. That's left to the Louisiana Racing Commission, although we have a great relationship with those guys.
And every day, you commute from New Orleans, don't you?
And in 2008, when I was lured back into state service in Baton Rouge, I have driven virtually every day to and from my residence there on my time, not the state's time, and I'm okay with that. So far, I'm okay with that. I usually try to spend Fridays in my New Orleans office.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Ronnie Jones, and we commend you for over 40 years of service, 44 to be exact, public service in our state.
Thank you, Jim.
Always a pleasure. We're joined now by His Honor Moses Evans, the Justice of the Peace in East Baton Rouge Parish, one of the justices. By the way, how many are there in East Baton Rouge Parish, Moses?
There are six Justices of the Peace here in East Baton Rouge Parish. I'm the best in the business. I'm the most beautiful and the most loving one of all.
Well, you, a few years ago, embraced this same-sex marriage decision, and I know, based on what I've been told, that some of these justices, at least one, does not perform same-sex marriages, but you do it, and over the last 3 years, how many ceremonies have you performed?
I think, Jim, I probably have performed about 70 ceremonies. The rate of same-sex marriages has been going up. Ever since President Trump has been elected, I've been getting a lot of people coming with the same-sex marriages, a lot of immigrants and a lot of interracial marriages. Everybody is rushing to the altar and just showing tremendous love and family value.
Because of Donald Trump?
I think it's because of Donald Trump. I want everybody to know I love Donald. He's a family guy. He's surrounded with his children. He has five kids. And he loves making love, just like we all do. He has three baby mamas. He has more baby mamas than I do. I love Donald Trump. He loves his family. He loves his children. And I love family.
All right. Well, Donald Trump has been the president for about half of the time since same-sex marriage came to be the law of the land. Now, 70 ceremonies performed by Moses Evans over the last 3 years. Is it mostly men or women who are doing this?
It's a mix, Jim. It's a mix. And the same love that I see in a man and a woman eyes, I see in the same-sex couple.
And we'll be back after this pause for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And our guest for a little while longer is Moses Evans, Justice of the Peace in East Baton Rouge Parish. He's based in Baker and performs ceremonies all across the city. He, of course, had his world change in a big way 3 years ago with the legalization of same-sex marriage by the U.S. Supreme Court. It was 3 years ago today, 5-4 vote, and now it is the law of the land. And Moses says he has performed 70 ceremonies of same-sex couples in the last 3 years. Now, I noted, and a listener picked up on it, there's at least one Justice of the Peace here in Baton Rouge who does not do same-sex marriages, and the listener, Holly, in the Garden District says, how can that be if it's the law of the land, Moses Evans?
Holly, I'm a Justice of the Peace. I heard it from the podium of the Attorney General's office. You do not have to perform same-sex marriages if you refuse to do all marriages as a Justice of the Peace. You can perform same-sex marriages as a minister and be exempt from performing same-sex marriages as a Justice of the Peace. I think that is highly unfair. I think we as Justice of the Peace, we're judges. We can't just represent the people who elected us. We're sworn to protect and represent everyone. And unless you do all the duties of the office, you should resign your office and give it to somebody. I served the public as a police officer. I received a disability retirement from the Baton Rouge Police Department. I couldn't write green people tickets and not write brown people tickets. You can't refuse one part of the job. It's what the Supreme Court has said. I think we need to follow the law, obey the law, and everybody needs to be represented. It's liberty and justice for all.
I thought that was the chief duty of a Justice of the Peace, was to perform marriage ceremonies.
That is one of the chief duties as a Justice of the Peace. The big thing is eviction court. A lot of JPs do evictions. And, you know, eviction court, civil suits up to $5,000. But, you know, to refuse them and do them as a minister, just like, you know, when racial discrimination was prevalent. You know, I've hear same-sex couples tell me that they call the Justice of the Peace and he charged $600 for a ceremony. This same kind of discrimination was shown against black people, minorities, and the people. We got to love everybody. I'm a Christian. I want to love everybody.
877-217-5757 for Moses Evans, who has fully embraced the Supreme Court decision of 2015 legalizing same-sex couples' rights to be married in the United States of America. What is the average cost of a wedding conducted by a Justice of the Peace?
Jim, the average cost is $100. $100, but I work with anybody economic situation on a case-by-case basis. We need families. We need families more than ever. And when I do a wedding, I not only look at the couple that's getting married, I look at the children that are impacted by the marriage. Our children, man and woman relationships aren't doing too good. Children need an atmosphere of love and watching two people love one another, have problems and solve their problems. And I'm so proud to be an American citizen. I'm so proud that I live in a great country. I'm not a black man. I'm a red, white, and blue man. And I love people, and I love families. And our children and our families are so sacred.
All right. A listener, Javier, asks, if somebody is against same-sex marriage on religious basis, why should he or she be required to perform a ceremony?
The law is written. I'm not a Supreme Court justice, but guess what? If you work at Walmart, you can't just wait on white people and not wait on black people. If you have a car lot, you can't discriminate because of a person's sexual orientation. We all have laws against discrimination in the United States of America. And if you have immigrants, you do a hearing in court. We live in the United States, the most powerful country in the world.
All right, another listener asks, is this just one JP, or is it a case of others doing the
I
same?
I would strongly, the gathering of Justices of the Peace and Constables in the state of Louisiana is the largest gathering of elected officials in the state. I welcome an investigation. An investigation to see who's doing the same-sex marriages, who's not. It can be investigated. All marriages are recorded in the clerk of court office. And if this investigation is performed, they can find out who's performed them and who's not.
Well, based on what you have conveyed, I'm hearing from you that Attorney General Jeff Landry has said that if you don't perform any marriages, you can do it that way if you're a justice of the peace. But if you perform a marriage between a man and a woman, then you've got to also do one between a man and a man or a woman and a woman. Is that right?
Correct.
So some people say, well, okay. But you're also saying that some of these justices of the peace are ministers, and so they do marriages of opposite sexes in their churches, but yet they don't do any marriages if they have religious beliefs in the courthouse.
Correct. And I think no one is beyond the law. You know, no one is beyond the law. We're not to interpret the law, but to follow the law. And you can't pick and choose based on your religion of what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. I worked as a Baton Rouge police officer, and my father served as one. And when I liked this guy Scalise, he had his picks. But when he came under fire, he didn't care what the sexual orientation. We need help. And I served on the Baton Rouge Police Department. When I called for backup, I didn't ask a person, well, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Are you same sex? We're all Americans. We're all one people. When you close your eyes, you get to see people for who they are. We all bleed red.
Well, yeah, Steve Scalise, his life was saved by a gay woman who was married to a female partner, and, of course, Steve Scalise is on the record against the Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage. Do you recall the first one you performed? I bet that was a historic moment.
Oh, yes, sir, it was. It was a very historic moment. And when I think of the persecution that people have faced because of their sexual orientation, it was such a moving event. Do you all realize how many teenagers commit suicide, the suicide rate that people face in a society that frowns upon same-sex people? When we discriminate against one person, we discriminate against all people. Same-sex couples may, what, be 5 or 10% of the population. They don't hold a big voting block, but their freedoms are very, very important. Their freedom and their right to marry. If they get married, they get insurance benefit. They get Social Security. They get hospital visitation. They get the same rights and protection that different sex couples get, and they deserve that.
Was there any protest at the courthouse at any time when this became the law of the land, Moses Evans?
I'm not aware of any protest, but we need to embrace all members of our society, regardless of how much money they make. Guess what? Me and our president, we're both going to leave this world. Naked we come in this world, and naked we leave out. And it's not about the outside, it's about the inside. I don't purchase my cars by how shiny the paint job is, and how beautiful the rims are. I know the essence of the car is whether the motor, the transmission, and air conditioning is good. And I look at people by their inside. They are love. They are love, and love is power. Love can solve all the world problems. And on Sunday mornings, we need to, like, lock all the church doors and say we're not going to hold church. We're going to go to the crack house. We're going to go to the hospitals. We're going to go to the nursing homes. We're going to go tutor some kids. We're going to go show love. I think life should not be about what Moses did, what Jesus did. I think it should be about what we do as individuals to make this world a better place. And I thank God. for the opportunity to be a justice of the peace. Peace and love will solve all the world problems.
Jennifer says that this is a way to promote family values and that conservatives should be aboard on same-sex marriage.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Family values. Right now, we have, look, our president, I love Trump. He's been married 3 times. He's had relationship problems. I love the fact that we have a president. He surrounds himself with his children. And family is what we're about as Americans, and family is our core values, and we need to promote families on every corner. And I encourage everybody, whether you're same sex or different sex, get in a committed relationship and love one another. Love is not loving that person when they're doing what you say to do. Love is unconditional, and we need to show unconditional with people everywhere. If I'm a Democrat, I need to get friends with a Republican. If I laugh and talk with a Republican, you know, we done squashed our differences. And, you know, let love reign in every aspect.
All right. And a listener notes that some of our presidents have had some issues with commitment. There was Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. And, of course, there was Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels, but who's a good Baton Rouge-based lady. Stephanie Clifford grew up here and graduated from Scotlandville Magnet in class of 1997. Not too far from Moses. Moses, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jim, and I love you, Jim. Thank you so much.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Becca Dill and Ali Baltazar are producing, and our guest is Dr. Lauren Wright. She is a lecturer in politics and public affairs at Princeton University, where she teaches courses on the American presidency and executive power. She's the author of On Behalf of the President, Presidential Spouses, and White House Communication Strategy Today. And her latest work is Crazy Speech. And good morning to you, Dr. Wright.
Hi, Jim. Good to be with you.
It's good to talk with you. Well, our president is certainly a man who is blazing a new trail when it comes to speech making, and he likes to give speeches, as he did last night, and you never know what he's going to say.
Exactly. And, you know, he gave a very similar one in Minnesota recently. I think that this president clearly has his own style. For the lack of knowledge he has about government in general, he is pretty much a genius when it comes to attention getting, which is a key component of success when you're trying to control the media narrative. And he knows that inflammatory personal insults, those types of remarks get the most attention, and he's very good at doing that. What that gets him in return, I'm not sure, because, you know, looking to the midterms, which I think maybe his team thinks that's his goal in riling up the base, nothing really matters until way, way later in the political process. The economy will matter, and it will matter what people think of him come November, but until then, it's just 24 hours to 24 hours.
How do you think he won the election?
I think his celebrity status had a huge part to do with it, and I think it's one of the least credited stories when it comes to how he won. I'm actually writing a book about celebrities running for political office right now, so this is fresh in my mind. But the thing is, you know, especially television stars, reality television stars, people who have been in the public eye, have such a huge advantage entering the earliest stages of the race. If you think about when Trump was heading into that first debate in August 2015, he had 98% name recognition. And the next person to even get close to that, who has a family legacy of politics, Jeb Bush, was around 80%. And so, you know, if you want someone to vote for you, there's no chance if they don't know who you are. And that's why this attention getting, this media narrative shaping is so much more important than I think people give it credit.
Our guest is Dr. Lauren Wright, lecturer in politics and public affairs at Princeton University. She teaches the American presidency, and she is a prolific writer as well, and her latest is Crazy Speech, and it's about the President of the United States, Donald John Trump. Now, you mentioned he had almost universal name recognition. Well, so did Hillary Clinton, and people forget that before she started campaigning for president this last time around, her poll numbers were high. She was, according to surveys, highly popular by the American people. What happened?
Yeah, and it's a great point, Jim. You know, and you can see the same effect sort of taking place if you looked at Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. She was much more well-known than her competitors. But it matters how you get famous, right? So the thing about reality television stars and Trump's decades of grooming his image as a successful businessman is people think they really know you. They think they have insight into your personal life. You have complete control over the image that's propagated of you. And so really people see good things. They see some bad things, but, you know, namely, they see the narrative that you shape. Now, when you come to prominence in politics, you're associated with, you know, ruffling a lot of feathers. Every time you speak in public, pretty much by nature, you're making one half of the electorate upset. And so that's the disadvantage traditional politicians like Hillary Clinton have. They come to prominence in the context of really polarizing issues that automatically alienate half of the public.
Well, and Donald Trump called her corrupt Hillary, and it stuck. And she was regarded by many to be a corrupt person, perhaps more corrupt than the president. And it's, in some cases, I'm sure it came down to being a lesser of two evils type situation. The president's numbers, I'm looking now at Real Clear Politics, they dropped a point overnight. He's now at 43% as far as his approval rating. His disapproval now 51.2%. So those aren't great numbers, but that's about where he was on Election Day, and he won an election. It all comes down to an opponent. Do you think he'll villainize his next opponent the way he did Hillary Clinton and the way he did Marco Rubio and the way he did Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz?
Oh, I'm sure he will. I think, you know, he is very, very good at branding people and getting a name to stick, as you just said, Jim. And the special thing about Trump, and again, you know, it does have to do with celebrity status, but it's his particular type of celebrity status. He can seem like a political outsider and claim that podium, even though he is now a politician, a professional politician. He has succeeded in convincing people that he's not the norm, that he's not an insider, that he's with the people, not with the government. And, you know, that's a talent. It takes a lot of work to preserve that image. And so, you know, the work that he's doing is essentially going off prompter, talking about issues in similar ways. You know, perhaps the average person can relate to him when he makes mistakes and he fudges something or he forgets a fact. That's how a lot of people imagine they would do in politics. You know, it makes the average person think, well, I could do that too. So, you know, it is a really unique attention-getting strategy that he has succeeded with. And you're right. You know, I think he'll continue to do that with these speeches that we're seeing.
Now, last night he gave one in South Carolina, and it sounded like this. He was criticizing some late-night talk hosts. You never know what you're going to get from Donald Trump. Here's how he sounded last night in the Palmetto State.
So, Jimmy Fallon apologized. He apologized for humanizing me. The poor guy. Because now he's going to lose all of us. You know, now he's going to lose all of us. If somebody would open a talk show at night, because the guy on CBS is what a low life. What a low life. I mean, honestly, are these people funny? And I can laugh at myself. If, frankly, if I couldn't, I'd be in big trouble. But there's no talent. They're not like talented people. Johnny Carson was talented. Some of these guys, no, seriously. I mean, this guy on CBS has no talent. Jimmy Kimmel would meet me before the election. I'm telling you a true story. I don't even think you'd deny it. No talent. But I'd go to a studio to do a shot, you know, to do a thing. He would stand outside on the sidewalk waiting for me. Oh, here he comes, Donald Trump. Oh, he opens my door. I said, does he do this to everybody, to his people? He does it for nobody. No.
All right, that's Donald Trump last night, and that's vintage Trump, Dr. Wright.
You know, Jim, I actually couldn't hear the audio there, but I'm assuming you played the, was that the Jimmy Fallon
yes,
making
indeed.
Fun of his
yes,
hair piece?
Yes.
Right. So, yes, vintage Trump indeed. And again, he succeeds in attacking Hollywood when, like he said, no one knows these people better than he does. He comes from a Hollywood background himself. And I think what's fascinating to me about how Republicans perceive Hollywood and late-night TV and such, and Democrats do, I'm finding evidence of this in the surveys I'm running, is Republicans assume that everyone from Hollywood is a liberal, and on average, perhaps they are right, although there are celebrities like Trump who are Republicans. And Democrats now are much more open to supporting Hollywood figures and late-night TV hosts, the actors and actresses we're seeing guarantee us that they'll be more involved in politics or even run in 2020. So that's a really classic Republican tactic, although many Republicans have run for office and been involved in the political process. Back when MGM's executives were Republicans, that was the real entrance of celebrities into the political process. And Donald Trump is, you know, for all the lack of experience he has and for the things that he says that give away sort of a sense of that, he has really good political instincts. He knows what sells. He knows what the greatest hits are. And attacking Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, those are very low-cost political opportunities that he sees as an upside.
Well, Dr. Lauren Wright, it's a pleasure. She teaches at Princeton University, one of the great universities in America. And we'll close with a note from Leonard Joseph. He says, the media elected Trump because he made the media money, just like you're doing now. And thank you for joining us today, Dr. Wright.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, thanks for listening and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.